Kaya Talk on Kaya 959. On the street, on the air.
And I said to you, we're going to have a conversation around suicide. This is where we begin this conversation. So, how many of you, let's be honest, how many of you have even considered, or maybe the idea just for a split second crossed your mind? How many of you have had that experience? I have a feeling it's a lot. I have a feeling the answer is going to be staggering. Well, the stats are right in front of me. So this is a study that was done by the WHO. It's called Suicide Rates Around the World study. And we are number two on the list of the biggest number of suicides that have occurred in one country. And men are coming out quite prevalently so here. The gap is actually quite big. And that I think warrants a conversation. I think it warrants us to be open about what is going on, what is troubling you, what is it that's bringing up that thought in your mind? Has it ever crossed your mind? What makes it cross your mind? And how are you coping with the prospects of having thinking or having thoughts around suicide? I'm going to say that you don't have to tell us your name. Okay, for your own privacy and so on. If you want to give us a call, you don't have to tell us your name unless if you really want to. And if you've come out on the other side, in other words, you were one of those people and you no longer have those thoughts, it's also going to be interesting to hear from you. How did you get help? What helped you? I'd love to hear from you. 086-000-959. I've got with me Annelies van Staden, who is a trauma counselor, on the line with us. Annelies, thank you for your time. Good evening.
Hi.
So we're seeing these numbers that are quite staggering around the number of suicides in South Africa. It's the second in the world. What is behind the kind of suicides that we're seeing?
Well, you know, I think in my own experience, I work in an independent a private hospital in Johannesburg. Mm. And, you know, I think perhaps the suicides that they are talking about in the stats are, you know, people that have attempted suicide and have done it successfully. Mm. From my own experience, in my field of work, I'm working in a hospital where we see, can I say, unsuccessful suicides?
Attempts,
so
yeah.
More attempted suicides. Mm. So, you know, and we are seeing a wide range of different types of reasons why people are doing this. Mm-hmm. But yes, we have seen a massive increase in the past year.
Annelies, I'm very skeptical of using the words successful and failed for obvious reasons, because it then makes it seem like you've achieved something, or that person has achieved something and has failed by surviving or living. So I'm not sure what the right terminology is, actually. But for those who do survive, are they keen to articulate what was going on with them?
Absolutely, yes. And a lot of them that have survived, you know, you know, we use the common term as in a call out for help or mm-hmm. a cry for help. Mm. And yes, I think through the right channels, people do articulate it.
And just maybe give us a sense of what they're saying.
Of what they're saying?
Yeah. Why do you know? Obviously, I'm looking for the kind of stat that is quite prevalent. What's behind some of these attempts?
Okay. So what we're seeing in my line of work is a lot of students that are finding it really, really difficult. And I'm talking sort of high school students and varsity students. You know, their whole lives have been turned upside down, especially their social lives. Classes are now online, you know, all due to COVID and what have you. So that's a big, big change. And we are seeing a lot of the sort of like teenage, early 20s mm-hmm. Coming in. We do also see quite a lot of, patients that have lost their jobs due to COVID, mm-hmm. perhaps experienced a lot of death due to COVID in the immediate family, immediate circle of friends, and they just don't see any other way of moving on in life. And, you know, they're sort of sucked into this overwhelming state of helplessness, and they just don't see any other way out. And after, you know, surviving something like that, I think they do start getting a bit of remorse towards what they may have caused, pain and fear and hurt towards, you know, the people around them as well.
Hmm. Let me bring in Lesego Matlangu, who is a head of research at Not In My Name International, who's also joining us for this particular conversation. Lesego, thanks for your time. Good evening.
I'm well, friends, and how are you? Good evening to yourself and your listeners, and thank you for having us this evening.
I'm okay, and I'm so glad that you are able to join this conversation, Lesego. I would love for you to add your experience to this conversation. You know, Annelise was just giving us her take from her experience in a private hospital. You do a lot of work on the ground with people who we know are facing real hardship with no jobs. We know that you go out and feed families and so on. In your experience, a lot of suicide that we see in the communities that you serve?
You know what, I think the conversation is, of course, without like paying attention or speaking about the socio-economic disaster that we find ourselves in as a country, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to withstand that would be an injustice to this conversation, that people on the ground are feeling absolutely isolated, they're feeling absolutely hopeless, you know, and suicide is becoming the order of the day and becoming the escape of the day for many people.
Mm.
And in particular, you know, men, and in very, very particular black men who find themselves in a disillusioned, you know, position, you know, because it's funny that when we look into the research that we are doing and we sort of like look to come up with like the understanding around this phenomena is that disillusion comes from and is distracted by the fact that men find out that they're not in the power that they think that they are in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So COVID-19 came at a time where, of course, South Africa is at the top of, you know, inequality all around the world. You know, it confronted a number of people with the actualities of what does it mean to be South African? What does it mean to be a South African black woman who constantly lives in fear? And what does it mean to be a black man in South Africa who constantly has to live in, you know, in some sort of defense, you know, that often, you know, is projected through violence and whatnot, you know. And so we see that the violence that men project in society, they're not only projected around to the people that they love or to the people that exist in their race and communities among themselves, but also within themselves also as well, you know. So the conversation and the phenomenon is very much linked to the violence that we find ourselves in society, right? Is that we don't see ourselves outside of violence, and not only us imposing violence to other people, but also inflicting violence onto ourselves as well.
Mm.
So we have internalized victimhood so much.
Mm.
That if we're not victimizing other people, then we are so much of the victim that we don't see our existence being worthy anymore. And so we kill ourselves and we die and lose battles to a number of mental health issues that should be, of course, at the heart of the conversation that we are happening, that we are having, that we are an incredibly disturbed, we're incredibly sick society. And we should talk more about what is actually happening in our community.
Annelise, thank you once more for staying with us. Annelise van Staden is a trauma counselor. I was just thinking earlier when you were describing the kind of people that have attempted suicide in a private hospital where you're seeing a lot of the patients. And I was thinking to myself, that's part of the problem. When you're sitting from the outside looking in, you often think they couldn't possibly want to take their life for that. But those problems for people are real. You know that someone was thinking of committing suicide because they were studying online, and you think, no, it can't be. But you're seeing that, you know, we can't grade this thing. If it feels like it's a problem to you, it probably is.
Absolutely, yes. And I think it's always important that you should always take the person seriously, you know. If somebody starts talking about it, then that is the point where one should seek some help. and you know, try not to wait any longer until maybe they mention it again or what have you. You know, these things quite often are planned. People, you know, they it's not often a spur of the moment sort of situation. A lot of them do a lot of research about it. So yes, if somebody starts talking about it and they verbalize it to you, we should get them help immediately to try and prevent anything from happening.
Let me take Ntokozo. You're calling from Guatemala. Good evening.
On the streets on the good evening, my sister.
Good evening, Ntokozo. Thank you so much for calling.
I've been that road. I've traveled the road. I have attempted suicide. I end up in hospital.
Do you mind if I ask, Ntokozo, how serious was your condition from
Hello?
The attempt? Do you mind telling us, you know, what happened?
It's a series of events that took place when you were young, you know. Mm-hmm. And when you come across these things again, you just say, this guy told me when I was young that I will end up to nothing. And now that I'm old, the same thing happens to me. It's not the thing that you decide overnight and say, I want to kill myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I want to commit suicide. It's an event. It's a series of events in your life that take place. The more when you fail, you say, hey, as in life, really, I was young when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get old, you're still going through the same feeling.
And what you're saying is that when things happen to you, you keep thinking they were right.
Yeah.
I will not amount to anything.
I will succumb to nothing. I will fail. You always when go through your relationship. This thing is an event of series. It's not an overnight thing.
Mm-hmm.
But once you start creating characters in your mind and you change how you think, you change how you see things in your life, you become the best. Have characters in your mind that you can talk to. And you can't go to people and ask for advice if you WhatsApp or what.
Mm-hmm.
But you can go to people and ask for advice. As my friend, she's going through this or he's going through this.
Mm-hmm.
Then they'll give you advice and you take those advice you use and you go maybe for counseling or social work and you work on yourself each and every day. Because they will come once in a while. But you must have a positive mind at all times and say, you know what, I'm not allowing myself to go through these things again because it takes a lot of energy in your life to start all over again building yourself.
Ntokozo, you said you tried, ended up in hospital. And that experience, when you finally come around after not having killed yourself, what goes through your mind?
If I'm going to look at the community, I'm going to look at my parents.
Yeah.
To look people I was really with when I was expecting that because of when I was bored, I want to start all over again.
And
if you don't have people our supportive next to you, you will do it again. But if you have people that welcomes you back and they talk to you, it's easy for you.
And maybe that's what I wanted to ask you, Wuti, in your experience after that, did you find that it was easy to come back to society? Did people give you support?
Yeah, it was easy for me. You know, there was not much of a support, but it was easy for me because when I was in hospital, I started having conversations with myself. And there was a music that made me a best man, A Man in the Mirror by Michael Jackson. I wanted to start with myself all over again because I was molested when I was young, my sister. So when things went bad, my phone was bored. Simple.
Ntokozo, so what changed it for you? How did you come out of that depression?
I'm a self-taught student of life. I allow myself to fail and run again and fall and wake up and run again. I now method my sister and say, this is what I've done. But because of great conversation on radio, great music on radio, going to church now and again, praying, and it's a lot of things that you can do. It's not a method you're going to say, okay, this is a manual. After you try to commit suicide, go through this and that. No, you allow yourself to step by step. Don't pressurize yourself because you will keep on doing the wrong things. But take it one day at a time. If you turn to Kali one, avoid Kali one. If you turn to violence, just talk. Man, go on talk also because I'm part of the field. So we have made a vote so that when this young man akuluma na wonga mamele, say no go zulu. Once you have that voice and say Tembal Bulad, then you will start all over again, looking forward.
Mm. Yo, ndogozo, siyabonga putuam, ndogozo e kwa tema. Isoko, you know, from listening to ndogozo, who says this is not a once-off decision. You know, things happen. It's a series of events. Just maybe give us a sense of, in your experience, what does that look like?
You know, Pamela, we really are living in the times, in the generation of indota must, right? So it's not even just the pressure of like from the immediate or like the micro family, but it's from the macro family or the micro society, right? Where it is expected that a particular person must have achieved a particular thing by a particular time. And if you're not then defined by all of those things that society deems that you must have, then those pressures are constantly always there, whether it be a young woman who must have had a baby by the time you are 25, married by the time you are 27, or a man who must be, you know, a provider of some sort, do you understand? So all of these societal things or socialization concepts that we have about what we think people must be or not all contribute to the psyche and the mental health of a collective society, right? And so when we begin to use materialism to divide, to define people, to say that you're far more of a better man if you have 1, 2, or far more of a better woman if you have achieved particular things, then all of those pressures are what we wake up to face each and every single day. While we're not willing to confront collectively so as a society that the problems that we are facing is a 37% unemployment rate of young people. These are the people that are dying on a permit. These are the people that are contemplating their lives each and every single day. But what's funny about mental health and the conversations that we are having around mental health is that we choose to isolate it, right? So we choose to isolate it to a Lesego problem, that Lesego is unemployed, Lesego is going through whatever struggle that she's going through, Lesego, as the language would be right now, you know, rather than recognizing that Lesego is part of the statistics of young people that are out there trying to participate in the market, trying to participate in society, but they are so isolated, you know, and this is where they find themselves, that rather than understanding their problem as a social problem, they have isolated themselves. And now they're contemplating their life because they feel isolated, and so they've isolated themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the pressures, more than anything for me, come from the like how we are so divorced from the sense of community, the sense of family, the sense of different kinds of relationships that we can rely on in society, you know, because, you know, the idea of individualism in society is thriving so much, you know, that we have totally detached and we have totally moved away from a South African ethos that is Ubuntu, right?
Mm.
And so I think, you know, these are some of the things that we should honestly like center at the conversation of mental health, to say, how did it get here? What is the relationship of the inequality rate of the poor getting poorer and the richer getting richer? What is that? How does it link to depression and the anxiety that we find ourselves in as a country? You know, how does our history contribute, you know, to the mental crisis, you know, that we find ourselves in, you know? But these are everyday pressures that people have to contemplate, or people are confronted with each and every single day. And unlike you and me, and even a Ntokozo, who's so strong with his story, they don't have the articulacy to explain or to even to understand, you know, the kind of crisis that they're going through as people. And so that's why suicide becomes perhaps the simplest thing that most people can do.
Hmm. McDonald, you're calling from Rustenburg. Good evening.
Hello, how are you guys?
I'm well. Thanks for calling, McDonald.
I'm great, man. Lovely topic, lovely topic.
Hmm.
You know, it is sad, but it all boils down to one thing. When we grow from being small kids to being fully grown adult men,
mm-hmm.
it all starts with a structure of having a male guardian that will structure us properly, and not financially, you know, because now we live in a financial world where the pressures are mostly financial. Yeah? But if somebody can guide us in a direction when you're young, that money is not everything, and you can pull off many other things without money. When you're grown, you realize that money does play a role, but it's not everything.
So, you know, it's easy to say that, isn't it, McDonald? Because you are now saying that and you realize that. But especially for young people, just look around us. There's Instagram, there are all these other influences where everybody makes everybody feel smaller for not having this yacht life.
So this is where I regard myself as well, you know, as a bit of a grown-up person. It's where you show people that I've recently relocated from where I used to live to somewhere else. So it has made me realize that the kids that I've left behind need more of a fatherly role than the money that I provide to them. You know what I mean? Because I'm constantly throwing money at the problem because that's what they see on a daily. But the kids are so inflamed because they're on time. I just need an hour of the time. They literally say it their own way. And it made me realize that if they grow without me there, it will lead to one of those depression states because nobody guided them through all the little things in life. You get what I mean?
I do hear you. I hear you. And it's quite real. McDonald in Rustenburg, thanks for your call. Tabo, you're calling from Heidelberg. Hi. Tabo, you're calling from Heidelberg. Good evening.
Evening. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for calling, Tabo.
Yeah. I'd like to agree and disagree with your panel there. First of all, I'd like to state, Uti, I'm going to be speaking under protest because, first of all, you are discussing an issue that is affecting mostly men. It's a big issue among men, and it's a woman-only panel. I just wanted to clear that out of the way. I think we needed a man to be there in the panel. Okay, what your guest mentioned with regards to the economic status of the people on the ground, 100%, I agree. But furthermore, I'd like to add, we, for the past more than 10 years now, we've been encouraging, I'd say, even quotering for companies to be more of hiring. I don't know whether it's a government strategy to make sure that everybody is on the economy so that they can generate more tax. But we've been pushing for the employment of females in the employment sector. So we have a lot of men over the age of 35, black men in particular, who are just rendered unemployable or whatever is being said out there. So we've just given up in terms of looking for employment. And we know, whether you call it patriarchy, whether we call it whatever we call it, but at the end of the day, man is a provider. Man, if we are saying that, okay, sharp, let's empower women, which is okay, it's good. But if we are saying now we are disempowering men in turn after doing all that positive work on the other side, but we are destroying the other side, and we know that this other side is not as vocal as the other side. So obviously, men, we were not taught to talk. In fact, talking as a man in society is not particularly good. I would like to encourage men to rather discuss solutions of their problems, not their problems, because society can say, hey, men must talk, men must open up, what, but we know at the end of the day, that most information that we leak out there about our issues turns into weapons against us in future. It has happened a lot, but let's not divert. All I wanted to say simply is that, number one, we need a professional male, who, whatever professions that they have there in your panel, we need a male representative there so that we can speak about men issues. And number two, let's not discourage men being involved in the economy. We need to bring back empowering men. We need to bring men back. Homes are without men. Children are growing up without fathers. Men are disempowered in society, and men are killing themselves because they are disempowered in society. This approach that we are having of being liberal, you see those deaths there, that in countries that are so-called patriarchal, those Islamic countries, you do not find a high rate of suicide as much as we find to the so-called liberal and progressive progressive countries. Those who are pushing for a new system of men who are becoming women and women who are becoming men. Yeah, but I've said a lot, I think. Thank you for the opportunity.
Do you want to engage, or you just wanted to say and then leave us? I'm not sure. Okay, he's gone. Okay, there's not much I think I can say after that. And Elise, I don't know how much of that conversation you heard from our previous caller. There is a sense that power has been stripped away from what Tabo calls men feel, disempowered and so on. Does that come through a lot when you talk to patients that come through the hospital?
Not really. Not that I've picked up in my own experience, but just from my own opinion, I also think that, I think we passed that in today's society. The man can't always be the breadwinner, and the wife stays at home with the children, sort of thing. I think that's a thing of the past, and to make a household run, quite often mom and dad have to work full-time jobs, and we have things like aftercare for our kids or whatever, nannies at home. So I thought we were sort of past that in society, that we sit with the stigma of, the female stays at home and the man goes to work.
Lesego, I don't know if you heard that call from Tabo, lots of things that he was talking about. Disempowerment, Lesego, does that come through a lot with a lot of the people that you come across?
Definitely, it's the disillusionment that I think I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, to say that men find themselves in a position where they want to be poster boys, or they are positioned as poster boys of patriarchy and power, right? And the idea is that in Dr. Mast, the idea is that a man must provide. The idea is that, the socialization of the family or the socialization of the society is puts the man in a superiority position, And the superiority position obviously exists within a superiority-inferiority complex, right? Mm-hmm. And at this particular point, then, when men realize that they don't even have the tools put into place for them to actually practice any kind of power or to actually be powerful, then I think that that's where perhaps maybe the ticking bomb is, or perhaps maybe where people actually do lose it, right? And I think this is a conversation that we're not willing to have, and maybe perhaps that's why Chimamanda Adichie will say that we must all be feminists, because rather than perceiving feminism as the idea that, it's the whole world against the men, it's actually an ideology, an idea that says that we must stop putting pressure and we must stop using power to get our way around, because clearly the centralization of power upon particular people is not working out, because all power corrupts, and when it does corrupt, then it is maneuvered through violence. It is maneuvered through violence, whether it be internalized violence or violence towards others, to actually get your point across or to impose whatever kind of power that you think that you have. But in a growing society of where capitalism is thriving right by the day, and we can see that not all of us can be powerful, and power remains very centralized towards particular people, or if you have particular things, or if you hold a particular status in society, it becomes an entire huge illusion to think that you have any kind of power. And so that is why, you know, someone would feel disempowered as a man, that we are trying to empower more women as possible, you know, because we are trying to move people away from the idea that indoda must. And we're trying to say that as society, we can all rise together, we can participate together, and we can see ourselves as equals, right? And up until such a time, I think that anything outside of what orientates or what is subjected to patriarchy is going to be seen as an attack towards men, when in actual fact it is not, because I think that it's incredibly unhealthy that we want to place all of these social pressures upon men when we should not do that, you know. There's one analogy that I like to use a lot, that this is how we socialize the boy child. So we'll say to the boy child, Tato can go outside and buy bread or go into the streets at night, but Lesego can't, right? Because we automatically teach them that you have some kind of social power to react to whatever violence that we perceive is happening in the night time, right? And Lesego, the girl child, can't do that. But what we don't talk about is that through that internalized thinking and the thinking that we raise the boy child with, what do we perceive or think that they are going to do with that kind of violence? But then what happens when they meet Lesego, who does not think that she needs the protection of a man, right? Mm-hmm. That's when they begin to feel empowered and whatnot. I think that's incredibly very dangerous. And I think men should, you know, we should start seeing men outside of masculinity and violence. And until such a time, I think this is going to be the siege that we exist in.
Tsepo, you're calling from Soweto. Hi. Hi, Tsepo.
Hi, ma'am. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for calling, Tsepo.
Hi. Oh, hi. Toby Kielon, my yo. No, yo, you know what? Indeed, South African men are clearly suffering in silence.
Mm. Mm.
And if one person has, of course, causing this, you know, I don't want to sound feminist or, you know, sexist, but clearly and obviously in South Africa is women. Not all women, though. They, you know, they put these poor men under enormous pressure.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is that most South African women are selfish and poorly mentally conditioned. They are over-entitled. That's how I feel. You know, in a family where both a man and a woman are doing well, you know, in a situation where a woman loses her job,
mm-hmm.
you know, it is, the life will still continue as normal.
Mm.
But should a man lose his job, he'll be ridiculed, undermined, mistreated by the whole family. And most men, you know, work unnecessary overtime because, you know, they left, you know, I'll put exclamation marks, a monster in their own home, and others drown themselves in alcohol because, you know, they need to keep up with the Joneses. You know, women are people who like to compare themselves. So and so, whatever, they're doing well, anyway. I'm not following me, you know. So, you know, and you know, we love differently, guys. We don't, you know, love the same. And you know, the conclusion that I reached, you know, now I'm in my 40s, I realized one thing, that only a man, not, you know, I still, you know, I tend to be corrected, but I'm saying only a man can love a woman with no money. Can love a woman with no house, no car. Only a man can love a woman to expect nothing in return. But on the other side, women can't do that. A woman will love. The woman's love comes with condition. You must have this. You must have that. The only time that a woman will love unconditionally. So I think, you know, having, you know, Luna more in the studio raising this as women, it's a positive way to, you know, enlighten the you know, South Africans, both men and women, to talk about these things so that we can stop this thing from going on and on. Because you are right, there's a lot of people who are committing suicide, and it's mostly men. There's a guy I knew, I once knew, who committed suicide. He did well, now, chile, tunneling. Things didn't go well. Go for another better guy. And that guy suffered. And he committed, no matter how much I tried to speak to him, but hey, brother, I couldn't understand. So I think, you know, topic alone, it will create awareness, you know. I'm not trying to blame women, and all I'm saying is that the way we are conditioning our girls when they grow up for it. That money is not everything, you know. Yes, it makes life easier, but with love, with other things comes respect and all those things. So, what happened about you? You know, I've got a baby daughter, and I'm raising her to understand that you know, she must try to work for herself, and you know, and only love because she wants to love, not because had to tell her to eat thing and she will get something in return if she loves this man. Because it's not gonna work.
The flip side as well, Tsepo, to this conversation is, I'm hoping we get to a point where we talk about prevention, you know, as you're saying. And for me, I think part of the problem as well is when and it's both sides, as you're saying, you're right. The woman gets attracted to the money and the things, okay, because you're doing well, like your friend. Can you have that relationship without flashing the money up front? Even if you have it, can you attract her without using the money? Can we try even that so that you don't get her used to this thing? You know, you are forever buying her love. Because unless if we also do that, then she gets used to this thing, this transactional kind of relationship.
I agree with you, my sister. We certainly talk a little like, you know, there's two types of men.
And how about you?
There's two types of men. There's an alpha man and there's a beta man. The alpha man will never use money. But the guy who are a beta man, they will use money to try, you know, let's say maybe this guy who only as an attractive. Now he made it in his world. You know? Now he's using his car. He's using his money to attract. And when things go south, he wants to blame the women. You know what I'm saying? So we also live on Renali, a point, a finger to be pointed back to us as men, especially those who use money to attract the women. But how do you think that you're going to do this? You can't blame the women as well.
Tsepo, lovely engaging with you. Thanks for your call, and thank you for being so frank. Estiango, you're calling. I know that this is not your name. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I love the name, but it's not my name.
I know. It's
so I'd like to start off by saying that I am a male. I'm 41. And I live with schizophrenia. And I just like to say to the previous caller that there's a quote by a rapper called Common Sense. They say, we live in a world where a man is determined by how much a man makes. I don't know whether we live in that world. And well, in my case, I'm not married, but I had a partner, and
this partner of mine was very successful, you know, career-wise. And I was struggling, and I was still studying Koskolom. And I obviously came across challenges with my mental illness during when I was studying. So I had to, you know, take a breather a bit, and later on when I felt stronger and went back to school, God helped me to finish my course. And I struggled a lot because I had, now the depression was getting to me because I couldn't get a job and I had schizo. So, but I like to focus. I know you're talking about suicide and all that, but I like to focus on elements that, you know, that could help people. You know, it's important that you, I mean, it's very important that you, if you're diagnosed with a mental illness, depression or whatever, it's important that you take your meds. You have to give yourself a fighting chance. You have to exercise. You have to read positive material. Personally, like, I came across a philosophy called Stoicism. And I'm trying to, I would say that I'm trying to live a Stoic life. So, I mean, yes, you know, obviously society has, there's a stigma with mental illness, and like people who've got mental illness are treated like an outcast. A man who's mad is seen as a weak man. So it's getting challenges, you know, and but as men, Lerona, as a person who suffers from mental illness and all that, you can't all the time. You can't even mix those meds with alcohol. You know, I mean, yes. You know, it's a mental illness or whatever, or the challenges, but you have to take responsibility. At the end of the day, you got yourself. You have to make your mental health a priority. You know, for me, it was hard because even my friends, even my friends were like the only time they came is after when I attempted suicide and it didn't go right. And it's like when they came, it's like, no, Mfana, that's my luena. But they didn't stay long too. To let me explain what in perfect it's working in, you know. So it is a really tough journey, especially when you've got a mental illness. But unfortunately, like you know, it dynamics are not, because even we don't even get family support. So I was fortunate enough, you know, my mother is a nurse and my sister had studied a bit of psychology. So when I got the diagnosis, I started reading about it. What type of schizo do I have? Because, like, schizophrenia is different. So it is really a challenging thing to have a mental illness, and especially ulumchika, and then you have 2 days weak, you know, and and it's tough. But we, at the end of the day, if mortality, mental illness, then a 20, I pay a good fighting chance to live, you know.
How
I mean, right now, and this, and in total unemployment, yes, maybe they've gotten, like I would say this, they've gotten worse throughout the years. If you can look at unemployment, it has been steadily increasing all year on year. And then when I graduated, I was 23. And I was fighting, like, obviously I was fighting to get myself into a good career. You know, but there were challenges. You studied programming, you're young, you are eager to prove yourself. You studied programming and all those information systems and finance and all that, and you want to get into a good career. And all you get is a call center job, and like it's hard. You deal with those things, and you're like, "Papa, now, and when to come on, to come on, what's it? I'm never gonna fail." Yeah. And,
how are you coping now? How are you now?
I think I'm coping better because, like, eventually, like, at my age, and it happened this year, and I just gave credit to God. It happened this year. I got a training contract to pursue the career that I love. And I'm taking my meds. I try to exercise. I try by all means to eat healthy. I practice stoicism. I read a lot of books. And yes, I'm like I am single now. I've been single for quite some time, and like it doesn't, I don't feel lonely, you know, but I keep myself busy, you know, I keep myself busy, and I don't exert, I try to stay away from exerting too much pressure on myself.
Sure.
And you, at the end of the day, even if you don't, people don't talk about what's killing them, but at the end of the day, it is your responsibility, no one else, to pick yourself up and fight. Fight to live.
You've been a very inspiring call. Thank you so much for the courage. Thank you so much for being so open with us. Really appreciate it, Stiango there. And we'll come to Annalise in a short while just to unpack this mental health problem, which I think he's hit it on the nail. It's part of the biggest problem that we see. And it goes unchecked because we don't talk about it. And you know, it's difficult to also diagnose. So I'll also be taking more of your calls on 086-000-0959. That call we just had before an ad break, I think, was quite a call. Annalise van Staden is a trauma counselor. Annalise, he spoke about mental health, which I think is such a big issue that we don't discuss. And because we don't get to talk about it, a lot of people don't get the right diagnosis and obviously go untreated.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that's maybe like the core of it, is that people go through what they think are minuscule traumas during life, and they all sort of pack on top of each other like a tower. And, you know, we don't deal with those things. And no matter how small you think your trauma or your issues are, you know, you should always reach out and see a psychologist or a counselor just to chat about it, because it's quite often all these things through life tower on top of each other, and then one small thing that really shouldn't topple your tower, it does. And that is when, you know, the attempted suicides happen. And if we are chatting to the patients and we work backwards a little bit, we do find that, you know, they've been through a lot, and quite often they're sitting in a PTSD situation, post-traumatic stress disorder, and it hasn't been diagnosed properly. And after years and years, people, you know, try to commit suicide just without their family or friends even realizing what's going on inside them. And that's why it's so important for communication to happen. And we should always talk about what's going on. And if we don't feel comfortable talking to our friends and family, we should really, really seek help through a counselor or a psychologist. Mm.
Kagiso, you're calling from Norwood. Good evening.
So, yeah, I just wanted to, you know, drop in with just like my two cents, because I felt like, because I listened to your show a lot, you know, first time caller and all that. But I felt like we were getting a bit sidetracked just hearing some of the comments. It felt like there was a lot of women are the causes, you know, of men's suicide, you know, and this is not to downplay like the societal pressures, you know, that, you know, men go through. And I do agree that there's a lot of pressure and there's not popular support, you know, in terms of like what men go through. But I think that there's a lack of accountability when it comes to Rona Relebanna, you know, like the kind of support we offer each other, especially when things get hard, you know, in order to perhaps like mitigate, you know, if I feel like I'm going through a really hard time, and the only option I see out is, you know, committing suicide. There's not a lot of just generally like support or like emotional intelligence or, you know, like conversations that happen around and like some gentleness together to support each other. And I think that that's something that I felt was missing in you know, some of the people, like Googling, who are commenting.
Yeah.
You know, it really felt like it's getting a bit off track.
You know, Kagiso, you've got to meet people where they are, right? So, and I guess this is part of what Annelise was saying earlier, and we were saying that if for somebody this for them is the reason they feel the way they do, you've got to work with that, right? So so your perspective right now, when Kagiso, is that you're saying, well, let's look at it differently, let's have a bit of introspection, us men amongst ourselves. But the point here is that if you don't meet people where they are, you're not likely to help them. And so what's the point of us saying, no, that's not true, it's not the, because that's how he feels. I may not agree, but for him, that's real. He, you know, that caller that Thabo feels that, you know, men have been sidelined, women are a problem, we shouldn't be talking, women should not be giving advice, men must be getting jobs. I mean, you could hear what he's saying, you know. And so I may not agree, but that's how he feels. And when you hear his tone, quite clearly, he, number one, believes it. And number two, it hurts him.
I totally agree. Like, I totally agree about meeting people where they are. But I think we also just, that kind of thinking, that attitude creates a cycle where you're not getting, like, real help. Because you're going to be, you're going to be in an echo chamber where you are constantly rehashing conversations around, like, I am outcast and I'm outcast because of women. And then in your circles of, like, support and whatnot, with men and women, it's either you're going to be, what's the word, like, making women, you know, like, the villains. And even where you are and having the conversations with men, you're not getting to the root of, you know, like, issues, and you're not getting the kind of support that you need, you know, for me. And I think that's a big issue.
What are the chances, you know, though, Kagiso, that if if I disagree with Thabo and we went on that journey, that he's going to listen? What are the chances? Does it sound to you like Thabo is willing to listen to another woman, give him a different opinion? Hardly. Doesn't sound like he would.
But I think, like, on a personal level, like, how does Thabo actually heal without, you know, coming to the real truth of, you know, who's been a halangayan? You can pick a victim, you know, or a villain, rather. And ultimately, whatever villain you pick or you choose does not help to get to the root of the issue. What we need is support from each other, right, as men. Because, like, oftentimes, like, Utloza advice that comes from a man more seriously, you know, than when it comes from a woman.
So here's the thing. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right about that. So what I think will happen is that Thabo is listening to you, and he's going to hear you differently. If I had told him what you have said, he wasn't going to listen to me. But I think he's going to hear it differently because you're a man saying to another man, I think we are getting off track a little bit. I think we need to do some introspection. I guarantee you Thabo is going to hear you better than he would have heard me. And that's the truth, which is what makes your call so important.
Well, I hope it helps him.
He's got to be ready to hear it. And that's the thing.
That's the other thing.
He's got to be ready to hear it. Thank you so much, Kagiso. Steve, let me give you a last bite at this, Lesego. It's been quite an interesting conversation.
Yes, thank you so much, Pamela. And I think that I'm very glad that men actually called out. And I totally do agree. I think it was with the other caller who said that we should have be more inclusive of men's voices in such conversations, right? I just want to say that at the heart of mental health is that when we have a conversation and when we begin to orientate ourselves around mental health, it's not an opportunity for any one of us to be dissolved from being held accountable. In fact, it is an exercise that demands a lot of accountability for you to actually overcome, you know, the crisis that we are going through, whether it be collectively or even as individuals. And I think for me, in terms of, you know, even the voices of men speaking out and whatnot, men must not feel that they have to be defensive, you know. I think men must allow themselves to be vulnerable. But I think vulnerability is going to be actually where we begin to hear them, you know, outside of aggression, you know, outside of even trying to prove any kind of point or even having to be right, you know. Now, I like the approach that you took all throughout this conversation to men, or that perhaps we're not going to have, like, a wrong or a right, you know, opinion or caller, you know, but we're just going to hear, you know, each and every single one out, and we're going to try to get to the root or to try and entertain the matter outside of defensiveness or disagreement, but to try and help people meet them where they are and help them where they are to elevate them, you know.
Yeah, thank you so much for that, Lesego. Annelise, your last bite at this?
Yes, I'd just like to say thank you for the opportunity. And, yeah, I think if any men are struggling out there, you know, that they should maybe seek help and speak to another man. Maybe that would help them better. In my experience at the hospital, we're able to help men and women, no matter what their situation is. But yes, if one does need to connect with their counsellor or their psychologist for everything to come out and flow properly. So if one feels more comfortable speaking to a male, then that's somebody's personal choice.
And Elise van Staden is a trauma counsellor. Lesego Matlangu is head of research at Not In My Name.
Kaya Talk on Kaya 959. On the street, on the air.